Invited here by Don Munton, for those of you who know him, here at Houston's First. And I had given a talk, I don't know, it had to be, I've known Don now maybe four or five years. And he had brought a group of leaders out to Glen Erie in Colorado Springs, which is where I live, and had asked me to come out and talk through a couple things related to singles. Boundless.org is the young adult singles ministry, a focus on the family, which might seem like an oxymoron. People are like, focus on the family, don't you just talk about marriage and parenting? And we do a lot. But I always argue to our leadership that if we're actually going to have marriages and families in the next 10 to 15 years, we actually need to be building into our single adults as well. Because the more dysfunctional single people you have, the more dysfunctional marriages you're going to have. So we try to grow people up. So I did a talk there that centered around a thing that I call the six markers of maturity. And I didn't bring them out. They're currently sitting back in suitcases. But at the break, last year I wrote a book called The Dating Manifesto. And it is, you're like, what does that have to do with maturity? I don't think dating is a very mature pursuit. But the argument is, it's really everything that I wish I had been told in my 20s about dating and the path towards marriage, but basically wasn't. I was just given a lot of nonsense and a lot of platitudes and a lot of cultural garbage. And that was, actually, I grew up in a Christian home with parents who had a great marriage, and I was fed a lot of things by the culture, and then the church, I kind of got crickets. And so this is my really cut the clutter, call it all out, treatise on what I feel is wrong with the pursuit of dating today, how we can do it differently, and then how we can thrive as singles in the meantime. And the last chapter of the book is actually written for parents of young adults, leaders, oldsters, married people in general, just to understand what in the world, who we are, what this means, how they can better encourage, love single adults, help us move through life stages in many different ways. So all that to say, at the break, I do have copies of the book. I'd be happy to, they're $12 each, I'd be happy to sign one to you or to that guy or girl that you want to date but isn't looking at you. You can send it to them anonymously. Anyway, so, but in the meantime, if you are not mature, you should not be dating. So we're going to talk about this first. And this is, Don actually had me, this is a talk that I traditionally give in the context of a young adult, so moving into adulthood. But his argument is, when I gave this at Glen Erie, was everyone needs to be doing this. And, you know, now that 50 is the new 20, it seems that there are a lot of people out there that either we wish were more mature, or maybe if we could point the finger at ourselves, we would recognize that as well. But I was sharing in the last session how I'm the youngest of six kids. And so I have older siblings, many of whom are well-meaning and generally clueless about where I am in life. And I have a sister, Sarah, who, this was several years ago now, and a group of my friends and I were serving at something in the church. And I can't remember why I was on the phone with her. She lives in Atlanta. I was telling her kind of what we were going to do, and she said, it is so wonderful that you do things with your youth group. And I was like, well, you know what? We're in our 30s, and we don't really call it a youth group, okay? We're not doing lock-ins. We're not, like, you know, going out to Mexicali and whatever, camping trips. But it was just funny because it just reminded me how there's this assumption that, you know, being single means you're somehow more immature or you haven't quite arrived or whatever. But all that said, I think there's a lot in our culture and in the church and beyond in our own relationships that's kind of perpetuating this almost an enablement of just immaturity in a number of different areas. And so what does it mean to be wise and to argue first and foremost for spiritual maturity, which we all should be growing in? And how can we best take hold of some of the disciplines, some of the relationships, some of the different practices we should be doing so that ultimately it's going to benefit ourselves, our relationships, our communities within the church and beyond, and it's ultimately going to glorify God himself. So we're going to move through these, and I'm going to leave, I totally told this to the last session too, I'm like, I'm going to leave time for conversation and Q&A, and then it was like 2 minutes because I just keep talking. So, self-disclosure, clearly something I need to mature in. Okay, we're going to start out with this. Can you guys hear this? We're going to start out with this video.
Hey, are you guys going to church on Sunday? I think Pastor Greg is starting a new series on Ephesians. No, Sunday is my day for sleeping in. Besides, I can listen online if I want.
My parents make me go to church with them. It is so annoying. Just because I live in your basement doesn't mean you get to tell me what to do.
Totally. I mean, you're 28. That's almost an adult.
I know. Hey, I applied for that job at the mall, but I didn't get it. Dude, why not? I want me to work 20 hours a week. I can't do that right now. Not when I'm almost on level 60 of Universal Conquest. You are my hero.
Well, at least you guys didn't get asked to go on that missions trip with Katie. Why is she always guilting me into stuff like that?
It's like a free vacation. You should totally go. I mean, don't other people pay for it anyway?
Yeah, but I can't go now. Not while Celebrity Cats is on. Maybe when the season's over.
Hopefully you don't see yourself in this scene. These young adults need to spend less time bowling and more time growing up. But how about you? Are you involved in a local church, paying your bills, serving others, and making your mark on the world around you? If not, Boundless can help you get unstuck. Think ahead 5 or 10 years. You don't want to be bowling buddies with this bunch, do you? Well, you don't have to. Decide now to do your future on purpose. You won't regret it.
So, that is just a short little video we created for Boundless. And obviously, you know, I talk most days, probably within the course of a month, we have about 400,000 to 500,000 in our sphere between our website, group blog, and I host a weekly show on radio and a podcast, and then our social media. We do a summer event and a couple other things. So we have a lot of single young adults going through our sphere. And we say, in describing Boundless, that Boundless's goal is to help young adults grow up, own their faith, date with purpose, and prepare for marriage and family. And that ties us into the overarching mission of Focus on the Family, as well as what we feel we're called to as well. But take off your single young adult hat as we talk through markers of maturity, because again, I'm going to argue that these apply to everyone. And so let's just jump right in. The first one is to understand and live out a biblical worldview. And I said in the last session, I was talking about really, and I'll probably tie it back into this one as well. We were talking about what the church has to do to reach single adults. And I made the argument that this is another thing that doesn't only apply to single adults, but to everyone who's part of a church body. This idea of identity. And I was talking about how you go into any, like, let's just say any given small group or Sunday school class or any time where you're not operating solo, which, I mean, how many of you, like, you know, raise your hand if when you're by yourself, you are generally awesome, okay? Because that's exactly where I am. When it's just me, I feel like I do really well. But the minute someone else comes in my sphere, things start breaking down, usually because they are crazy or they're selfish or they have issues. It's always someone else's problem. And so it's funny because as I started working through this and thinking through it, I started thinking of this idea of identity. And you think of, say you go into the, you know, a small group, or say I'll use a singles group because that's a lot of my context. And you feel like you're transported back to junior high because all of a sudden it's like, well, I heard her say that, he said that, she said that, her friend said that, that. And it's like, oh my word, are we literally here to like study the Bible or to just talk about the craziness that is going on in our own experiences? And I'm fully convinced that like 85% of our nuttiness could be eliminated if we just understood who God was and who God is and who we are, who God says we are. We have stopped preaching and applying the gospel, I think, in a way that is making us connect the truth of God's word to everyday decisions. And so that's why when I say understand and live out a biblical worldview, this isn't how many of you like retweet Francis Chan, or how many Bible studies you're in, or how many books you own by various pastors or podcasters. And it's not even like, did you go to a Christian school, or do you go to church a lot, or do you understand, like, could you name all the books of the Bible, and quite frankly, could you name a lot of spiritual truths and talk through them and stuff? It means that when you lose your job, what is the first thing you do? It means when your boyfriend dumps you, what is the first thing do you do? It means when that person at work cheats you out of a promotion, what do you do with that? And it's all a response that indicates the level of character you have, and are you plugged into what God has said about you and how he wants you to respond, or are you just choosing to operate in a way that the culture would expect you to, and certainly the various modes of the world, what that looks like. So understanding and living out a biblical worldview is really when the rubber hits the road, what is your faith look like? What does it look like, practically speaking, as you live it out in the everyday decisions of life? I do a lot on, I mentioned I wrote a book on dating. I do a lot of counseling of young adults around the topic of dating. And it's like, these are young adults that are in Bible studies and going to church. And like, you think that they were like living out the gospel right where they are. And then the next thing I know, they're like dating an unbeliever, then they're like living with this person, then they marry this person, then they're getting divorced because they just chose to go down a path of unbiblical decisions that they did not choose to line them up with what they said they believe. They're operating out of unbelief instead of out of true belief that God has their back and he knows their story and he's going to take care of them. I remember hearing John Piper speak. And he was talking about this guy who came up to him and basically said, Dr. Piper, here's the deal. I'm 25 years old, and I have remained sexually pure, but I'm only giving God until I'm 30, because how ridiculous will it be for me to have gone 30 years without having had sex? Okay, first of all, how dumb is this guy to say that to John Piper? I mean, clearly he didn't even know who he was talking to, because he got it in the next few sentences. And John Piper just talked about, first of all, this guy's problem isn't, how arrogant do you have to be to tell God what you're going to do? Like, God is going to sit there and wring his hands and be like, oh my goodness, Jeremy is going to go and sleep with someone. What am I going to do? And I'm going to be God in the midst of this. God is going to be affected by that. But two, what this shows is that, Jeremy didn't have a problem with relationships or with sexual purity or whatever. Jeremy had a problem with believing God. And not choosing to believe that God had a story for him that was ultimately good enough to be trusted with, even if that meant that his timeline was not going to line up with what God was choosing to place in his life or withhold from his life. And so, really, when it comes to it, as you evaluate your own life and the people that you minister to in your small groups and your classes here and beyond, what does it look like to really help them understand and live out a biblical worldview, applying their faith to everyday life, knowing who God is, who they are, and what does that actually mean for them? Number two is be accountable to a local church. I am a huge, huge fan of church membership. My boss at Focus on the Family claims he has not been a member of a church in like 35 years, and so I had to rebuke him because I am a big, there are just churches out there that don't do membership anymore, and I don't know if your church does or whatever, but I'm not talking about like, join our church and be baptized here, and then when you're 90, we'll call you up and like say something awesome about you being a member. I'm talking about you have put yourself under the authority of leadership within your church. So, and what does that actually mean? This means that when you do something out of line, you're church is going to come after you, basically. It means that you are in a context within your church that you are known within your church body, within the structure of leadership, within the structure of accountability. You're not just sitting in the back row taking in the show, holding your double-walled coffee mug, okay? You are actually known. You are actually accountable, responsible to someone there. You are actually living in community with people there. I always like to draw the parallel to the New Testament church, and I like how it shows when it talks through the deacons of the early church. they actually had lists of people that they were to care for. So this wasn't some abstract thing of like, there are these people out there that, you know, the church that we're supposed to worry about. No, they actually like had a roll call, and they were in the lives of those people to the point of not only holding standards of accountability and all of that, you know, and not giving up meeting together, but encouraging one another in all things in word and deed. But the widows and the orphans in their sphere, they were supposed to hold, you know, be holding them and be responsible for them, so that they were not forgotten. And so being accountable to a local church is being known. It's a means for you to get the accountability that you need, to get the mentorship that you need, to basically have people up in your grill who are going to be telling you what's what, who are going to be saying, like, here's what this is about, here's what that's about, here's what it means to participate in corporate teaching, to sit under the Word of God. This is not about, like, let me just push play on my laptop and listen to someone. You know, or worse yet, let me go sit out in nature and just be, it's just me and Jesus. It means that you're actually taking part in the sacraments, which are an important part of corporate worship. And so there's a lot there to be said for accountability to a local church. And all of these, I'm going to say, just as we walk through these, all of these are things that you're going to be growing in some measure in. You know, you're not like, okay, I'm accountable to a local church, I'm just going to check that off. I'm done now, and I'll check back in when I'm 75. No, it's like you're constantly, you know, checking yourself. In fact, who was it that I don't know who had originally said it, but I heard it quoted to me by someone recently at Focus who talked about how, you know, we're never growing. Like, inertia is never going to allow us to grow in a path. Either you are actively growing, you're intentionally growing, or you're moving in the opposite direction. You're never just chilling out in one spot and assuming that you're going to pick up in the future. And so I think that applies to both one and two there. All right, number three, learn life skills and shoulder responsibility. Now, you can easily see why this applies to the young adults that I talk to, because you know, it's a tricky business being a 20-something nowadays. And I'm not saying this disparagingly, because I feel like I was in much of the same spot when I was in my 20s. But, like, there are just certain skills and aspects of adulthood that have to be learned. They have to be taught. They have to be passed on. And you could take, like, a small example of this. Like me, for example, I cannot sew a button on clothing. I am sorry. If a button comes off, I either have to find someone's grandma to sew it on for me, or I throw out the piece of clothing and buy something else, and then I have to go all Dave Ramsey on myself, because that's just irresponsible and bad. So, but there are other things related to this as well. Like, what does it mean to actually have a job? Okay. So what does it mean to move forward in life skills and always be challenging yourself with the next thing? I mean, there are, you know, it's funny because I, when I talk with young adults, it's usually the women who come to me and they have got like 5 degrees and they're basically like, you know, well, what else do I have to do? Because no guy's asking me out, so I might as well just get another degree. So they're all mad and bitter and catty and crazy and stuff like that. And then the guys are like, you know, well, I don't want to ask her out because she's catty and crazy, so I'm just going to go with my buddies and we're going to go skiing. And so then they're skiing, and so then no one's doing anything to encourage the other person or move along in that life sphere. But it really is, it's not, you know, it's not a matter of like, oh, have you attained, you know, XYZ career? Are you earning XYZ amount of money? It's really about, are you just doing that next thing that's in front of you and using your talents and stewarding what God's given you, stewarding all of that wisely and shouldering that kind of responsibility. I mean, I have, you know, I feel like there's a lot, you know, you can even talk through the aspects of personal responsibility. I mean, like I said, there's life skills. There's stuff like knowing how to create a budget, knowing how to stay on budget. You know, there are people that are massively, I mean, the people within the church that are so massively in debt to the point where they're not freed up to be able to bless others or to be able to tithe or contribute responsibly or anything like that is really staggering, and it's unfortunate. So there are a lot of skills that have to be learned. But if you look at responsibility as a whole, think of yourself in terms of just responsibility for your own emotions or your own relationships, your own actions. There are a number of things. What does it mean to be a person of your word? What does it mean to, this is another classic example I use with young adults. What does it mean to not be given an evite and wait and ride it out until the last minute before you choose whether or not you're going to commit to this because you're hoping that something else better will come along and then you can just go to that instead? To actually say you're going to be somewhere and then show up. To actually say, you can count on me for this because I'm actually going to be there and help you out with this. To actually be the first to volunteer for something, even if all the cool people aren't volunteering for it. To be that person who's going to stand up and show that you care, that you have character, and that you're going to commit to something is a big deal. Number four is contribute and lead right where you are. When I talk to young adults about this, I often get the, well, I can't really lead right now because what I need to do is wait until I'm on this stage at Passion or Catalyst or everyone is like trying to do big things when really God is calling us to be faithful in whatever he's given us, you know. So I have a lot of people that come and they say, well, I want to do XYZ job or I'm waiting for this promotion or I'm waiting to be just awesome or something, you know, I want to be a worship leader, I want to be whatever, and yet they're just like stealing post-it notes from their workplace, they're, you know, fudging their time card, they're being lazy and lame, they're being super irresponsible in relationships, you know, guys, you know, defrauding women, just wasting their time, you know, dinking around, ladies turning around and being super gossipy and mean-spirited about the men, either individually or corporately in their church, whatever. Good leadership starts with ourselves, with our own hearts, with our own actions, our own habits, our own sin patterns, knowing what those are. I remember getting into I actually just went through a church mediation, believe it or not, with Peacemakers, another great function of being part of a local church. Actually, honestly, with a relative of mine related to stuff that we have going on in our family, and just recognizing that I'm responsible for the way I can sit there and like logically think of all the ways I've been wronged and be super angry about it and stuff, but I'm more responsible for my own response to that and the way that I'm treating this person in light of that and the way that I'm willing to trust God with that person. I'm actually doing a study right now where four chapters of the study have been on meekness, okay? Meekness is not something, like if you're up for, you know, say your 15-year award at work or whatever, your boss rarely will come and say, you know, Dave, the one thing I want to applaud you for is 15 years of meekness. No one says that. No one values that, and yet it is one of the qualities that is mentioned about Jesus Christ most often in the Bible. And it's one of those things, and what is meekness? It's being calmly strong. It's knowing where to draw boundaries, but also how to just, oh my word, I almost said let go and let God. Okay, let's not use crazy pontotones, bumper stickers. But it really is that. It's really saying, God, everything that happens to me is filtered through your loving hand, and I can accept that, knowing that I'm responsible for my responses, I'm responsible for my actions, but I can't control this person, I can't control this circumstance, but I know you can, and if you're allowing this to happen, then it's certainly within the purview of your will and of your scope of ability. You know, because ultimately, we serve a God who's both sovereign and he's good. And when you've got both of those things, you're locked in. You're good to go, okay? You don't have to worry about all these little skirmishes that are going on around you. And so you have the ability to step out of the drama fest and contribute. Roll your sleeves up. Be part of something bigger than yourself. Join the story. Be in leadership right where you are. Not only beginning with leading yourself, but then starting to take opportunities to lead in opportunities that you're given where you are, whether it's in the workplace, whether it's at church. Bless church leadership by actually like stepping out and saying that you're going to take point on something, you know, and not waiting around for, you know, not just to be the person who's just bringing chips again to the, you know, function or whatever. Not being the person that's like, well, you know, I'll let you know in 12 weeks if I can maybe come for like a half hour. I can't come for a whole hour, but whatever. Just be legit and show up and be the person who actually initiates in that space. And number 5, grow healthy relationships with family, friends, neighbors, and coworkers. I will never forget when a woman wrote to me at Boundless, and she started off by saying, Lisa, I'm getting married in 4 months. And I thought to myself, oh my goodness, that's so great. Congrats. And then she said, yeah, I have to get married because I have got to get away from my parents. And I'm like, wonderful. Okay. Clearly she has not been reading enough Boundless because she would have come across something related to that. But it's funny how often we think that if we could just get out of this situation, or if this person would just not, if you didn't act that way, then I wouldn't act this way. Or if I didn't have to be in your sphere, then my life would be so much easier. I mean, again, I get back to my first point of like, when it's just me, all things are great. Because I get along with myself extremely well. But you throw other people into the mix. And this idea that moving into marriage, I mean, I wrote back to this girl and I said, girlfriend, I said, if you have people in your life right now that are bugging you, your parents or whoever, I mean, I can guarantee you that not solving that issue right where it is at its root, your future hubster is really going to bug you too, okay? This isn't about I just need to remove myself from the situation, or I need to do something different, or I need to. And so there's lots of things that come into play with this. This comes into all kinds of aspects of emotional health. What does it look like? How do you communicate or not communicate? Do you understand what it means to have good skills of actually interacting with other people? Are you the person who can listen well, or do you find yourself just thinking of the next thing that you're going to say, you know, when it's finally your time to break into the conversation? Are you the person that can be trusted? Are you a safe person for someone to confide in? Do you give wisdom? Do you know when to just be quiet? In the last session, I was talking about how crazy I am from everything that has gone on pre-election, into the election, post-election, and now, I mean, I feel like if I read one more string of social media, which I, aside from my own personal stuff, I just have to do for my job, and I'm like, I can deal with all the abstract commentaries out there, but when I'm reading, like, friends of mine, like, literally just go nuts, and I'm like, I mean, now I'm just, like, feeling like I have to keep lists. Like, okay, who marched last weekend? What's going on there? Who was part of this thing? Who, oh, my goodness, did they vote for that candidate? You've got to be kidding me. How is that crazy? You know, now I'm, like, keeping all these little tally sheets of, like, all my friends. Can I still be their friend? Because I disagree on that, you know? And we're just so getting caught up in the crazy cultural churn of foolish opinions. And people so prone to just jump into things or believe things, or because they saw a meme or they saw someone was doing this or that. And instead of just staying silent and choosing to listen and knowing when to speak and coming back to Scripture for wisdom in all things. I also want to just throw in communication, but then conflict. What does it look like to do conflict well? Do you even know what your conflict style is? Do you have a conflict style? Another one of my friends got married to a guy, and one of the things she was kind of bragging about before they got married was they had never had a disagreement about anything. And I was like, oh my word, please do not get married. Because either you do not know this guy, or you do not know how to do conflict, or you're completely avoiding it. And I knew her style, and I knew a lot of her hang-ups. We're pretty good friends. And she married the guy and found out that both of them, see, they get along pretty well because they're both super passive people. So they're really passive, and so that's kind of how they work. So, like, nothing, you know, they don't argue because they just both avoid, which actually kind of works for them, and it's a little bit scary, and maybe that's because I'm not that passive. But where it's gotten problematic is she hadn't bargained on where the in-laws would come into play. And so the in-laws are, like, practically next door to them and all in their business and all. And so she's just up in arms about it. Because she's so passive, she won't address it directly, so she just wants to gripe at me. And then I'm like, stop griping at me, go talk to them. And then she's like, I can't talk to them. So you can see why I'm just in a cycle of crazy on a number of fronts. Another reason why I need to not have friends. So, no. But growing those healthy relationships and looking to see what you can do to be a peacemaker, what you can do to be a person who is moving towards people instead of away from people. And even choosing to build those relationships. I mean, you look at neighbors there. We are in an extremely isolated and fractured society. If I didn't want to, I would not talk to any of my neighbors. Many of them are weird, from what I know. I work at Focus on the Family, which usually makes people hate me right out of the gate if they don't know Jesus. So I remember going to, I just moved recently, but in my previous house, I lived in a very, you know, whatever, as far as you could say this, like, liberal part of town, I guess, which was funny because at Focus, so the north part of Colorado Springs is very conservative, and that's where a lot of the Christian ministries are and stuff, and I live downtown, which is not conservative. So someone came in, some awesome ministry person or whatever, came into Focus, and they brought these, like, it was right before Easter, they brought these lawn crosses. And it said, he is risen, and you stuck him in your lawn, and that meant that you were a Christian. I guess it was like Passover, you know, putting the blood on your doorframe, whatever. But so I saw all these, like, coworkers of mine that were lined up to get their crosses because they're super spiritual. And so I decided, well, I'm going to get my cross too. And my friend Doug, who lives in, like, a street that basically everyone is a pastor on or something, he's getting his cross, and I picked up my cross, and I said, Doug, I just want you to know that Jesus is going to give me a whole lot more credit for having my cross up in my lawn downtown than you're going to get up here in Jesusville. And he was all like, what? You know, and so we had a little sparring about that. But I can put my cross in my lawn, but then my neighbor Keith, who I tried to invite to church, and he turned me down, like, many times. I was mad at him because he turned me down, and that made me feel foolish. And then one time for Easter, I invited him to church, and he said, he literally told me he had to fly a kite. And I was like, you have got to be making that up. You're not even flying a kite. And I was so offended by that. Well, meanwhile, this is Keith, who is telling me to cut down these cottonwood trees in my yard because he claims that the roots are going to go, like, 300 feet or something ridiculous and, like, overtake his fruit trees or something, okay? Which, first of all, I don't even have time to worry about his fruit trees. But, so he's all up in arms about these cottonwood trees that I have. And so I told him, I said, Keith, here's the deal. Every time you go to church with me, I'm going to let you cut down one cottonwood tree, okay? This is me trying to, like, barter with him to get him to church. And he was like, what? You know, that's just crazy or whatever. And he has never taken me up on that, okay? So we can, I mean, you can look at your neighbors and just feel like there is no hope for this person. What is this person doing? What does it look like? But my goal, my job, is to move forward, move towards people, and love them right where they are. And it was an interesting, yeah. I mean, Keith was interesting, and then I had a, my neighborhood, too, they had this, every year they did this Christmas cookie exchange. So I was like the poor relation in a wealthy part of town. Okay, this is what happened. It was probably like some servants' quarters for back when they had these estates. Okay, so I live in that house. And first of all, I'm the only, like, one of two women that went to this cookie exchange, and there were like 75 women. And no joke, we were in the, all these women vie to have it in their houses because they're all amazing houses. And there were like 75 of us between the kitchen and the dining room of this home, and there was plenty of room for all of us to walk around. So had we had it in my house, we would have been like out into the garage and the neighbors and whatever. But so these ladies are walking around with their cookies, and I'm standing there with my plate of cookies, and this one woman, they all stay home, too, because their husbands are all millionaires or do something, I don't know what, but they're all home, so I come actually from work, and so this woman clearly knows I'm working, and she's like, oh, where do you work? And I said, oh, I'm at Focus on the Family. And she's like, oh. And then the next thing she said is awesome. She's like, you know, and this is like, no joke, we're in our festive attire with plates of cookies, and she said, you know, what I really hate about evangelicals is she just starts in on this whole like litany of things about evangelicals that she hates, and I'm just like, you know, Merry Christmas. And, no, we ended up having a really, really neat conversation about it, but relationships are hard, and they take a lot of work, but doing them well and struggling through them is a great way to evidence growing maturity. And finally, actively pursuing marriage or family in the next stage of life. Again, you know, I've often talked through this with young adults because I think it's very easy to stall out wherever you are in life. And this doesn't even have to be necessarily a relational litmus test in this sense. I think where it comes, I'll give this example as one. When I talk to young adults, I see a lot of young adults who are trying to, they're kind of afraid to take that next step. You know, we've heard a lot, I think in the 90s, it was kind of the thing du jour to talk about God's will and calling and what's your calling and how do you discern your calling and all this kind of stuff. And I love what Elizabeth Elliot said. She said, your calling is to do the next thing that God's put in front of you. That is it. That is all you can see. You've got one step right there, and that's where God's calling you to walk through that door, do that thing. If you know it's right, if you know it's in alignment with Scripture, if you know it's going to bless someone, if you know it's going to glorify God, if you know it's going to sanctify and grow you, just do it. And so in terms of marriage, you know, I see a lot of young adults who are like, well, you know, I've got to put out a fleece, or I've got to go and like date 25 million people to make sure that this is the right one and all this stuff. And so they're stalling out, and it's kind of like, okay, what does this look like? What does it look like to pursue? What does it look like? You know, they're waiting for God to tell them something, but what does it look like for them to maybe be a moving object and then let God steer them instead of just sitting there and digging their heels in? And so always that next stage. What does it look like to be looking ahead, praying ahead, trusting God for the next thing that he has you to do? And it doesn't have to be something big and awesome and, you know, some big ministry or big money maker or big amazing thing. We think it has to because we're reading everyone's blogs and listening to everyone's podcasts, and their lives are just amazing, apparently, and ours are lame. But it doesn't have to be. You know, there are a lot of outliers out there, and we all think we're the outliers. But the truth is, God, another example in the context of marriage, I always say this. I have so many young women come to me, and they basically tell me that they need to marry John Piper. So, and I always say, first of all, John Piper is married, so he's not available. But secondly, not everyone is called to marry John Piper. And third, John Piper was not John Piper when he was 24 years old, okay? John Piper has become who he is largely through life lessons, sanctification, and quite frankly, his marriage to Noelle, who only knows what God used her to do in his life, okay? So this idea that, you know, we all need to have trajectory. We all need to be moving in a direction that is toward the cross, that is toward growth, and not look for just, oh, I need to have this. If I just marry this person, that's going to make me into the person I want to be. Or if I just have this opportunity, that's going to do this for me. Or this is what this is going to look like. We have to recognize that, you know, that God has a number of things for us at different stages of life. And what does it look like for us to understand those and own them wherever we are? But to not just dig our heels in, to not just choose to be stagnating where we are when God's called us to do something, to be faithful in that. I had, in light of the actively pursuing marriage and family, there was, I mentioned, you know, that I'd written this, the book on dating, and I think it's interesting because there are so many parallels that I've learned in this. When my publisher asked me to write it, I was kind of like, well, what I don't know that there's really anything that I would say about dating that I haven't already heard or whatever. I don't really know what I have to offer. But it's interesting what God has taught me about himself through the whole process of kind of hammering out the dating space, both for myself and for others. It's such an interesting space to be in, and I think that, you know, God has called, you know, about 86% of us are going to be married at least once in our lifetime, and yet we treat it like it's some weird mystical experience that, like, no, you know, you don't know, it might just hit you like the flu, and you don't know that you have it, you know, or something. When in reality, I love that marriage is such a great thing. I mean, it's a picture of Christ in the church. The Bible begins with marriage. It ends with marriage. There's a lot of marriage in between. But God has also called us to, in me in particular, a unique season of singleness. And I never intended to be single this long. I never felt called to singleness. But it's where I am. And so what does it look like for me to trust God where I am? I was saying last time that that it's interesting how often I talk to single people and they think that they're uniquely cursed. You know, like they don't know how to trust God with their own singleness. And we're all called to trust God with something. You know, for single people, it might be their singleness right now. But then you get married and all of a sudden you're trusting God with infertility or infidelity or a rebellious teen or health issues or money issues or whatever. We all have to trust God. And what does it look like for us to circle around back to number one and recognize that God's got this, that we can trust him in the midst of it all and move on from there. So that is really all I had. I wanted to leave some time for questions or discussion around any of that. I also want to say I do have a couple things. I have copies of my book that at the break or whenever I'm happy to, like I said, they're $12 each, and you are certainly welcome to get one. I'll sign it to whoever you want. But I also want to pass out, this is just a recommended reading list that I have on a number of the topics that we talked about here. These are just resources that have kind of changed my perspective on a number of those things. So feel free to look that over or whatever. But yeah, any questions or comments? Yeah.
What do you think is the biggest like lesson you've learned from being single, like recently, I guess?
Yeah. Let's see. Let me think about that. I think I would say the one that comes to mind is just the reminder that God's story is so much bigger than my own little script. To realize that God, you know, we're so caught up, and it's not that God doesn't care about the details of our lives, because he does, but we're so caught up in our little lives being the be-all, end-all. And we just want to write our stories around ourselves and make everything about us. And what, you know, I love the way Paul Tripp talks about my wants, my needs, my feelings. We're so busy fighting for our rights. And what do I, you know, and I've had to think to myself, you know, I just always assumed that I needed marriage to be fulfilled. And you know, like I said, I don't feel called to singleness. I think it's a weird space to be in. Sometimes I tell my friends, because now I've passed the 40 mark, and so I'm like, I feel like it's going to be a miracle if I ever get married. But I'm reminded that God is in the business of miracles. Mm-hmm. And so I can trust him with that. And I know that whatever my story, however my story unfolds, God has got my back. He knows. I mean, he's not sitting up there wringing his hands saying, I don't know what to do about Lisa. I don't know what I'm going to do with her. I can't find anyone for her. I can't, you know. Like, he's all in a tiz about it, you know. So I think just sitting back and resting, knowing that there are good things for me to do today, and I can trust God with that, with my story. And I can walk humbly. I don't have to fight for prominence or position. I don't have to fight to be heard, because God hears me. God knows me. So I think those have been the biggest ones on that. So, yeah. Any other questions or comments?
No, I'm a married man in here.
Boo.
I'm unavailable.
Aw.
No, I've been married.
But do you know any single men?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm 58. One of my best friends is 56. He's a millionaire. He's been single all his life. He's had a lot of sexual relationships. He's never, ever had a friend that was a girl. He slept with every one of them, but he never wanted to be their friend. And he's pitiful. Good-looking guy and everything. Much of it stems from his mother and his power of his mother, over him. And he never could make any good relationships. And last November, we had I stay overnight with him. Sometimes we just talk all night type thing.
Yeah.
You'll see him out there late. And he said, Russ, I'd give up all this money, but I can't connect with a woman. You know, for some reason, I run out of things to say, and I'm done. You know, I'm that empty.
Yeah.
And I mean, he makes $9,000 a month.
Yeah.
I mean, he works for Lockheed. He makes plenty of money. And he says, I don't have any children. I don't have this. I don't have that. I mean, you know, y'all are young. You don't get into the maturity thing, you're not going to have these great things in the future that God's already going to give you. It's like we're knocking down his hands because we want to go have so much fun. And maturity is a painful thing. It's not a fun thing.
Yeah.
But it produces fruit that is eternal.
Yeah.
And that God wants you to be in the farming business, making children, making yourself mature, all those kind of things. And it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful. But you're going to get hurt along the way by God because he has to shape that cup.
Yeah.
My wife and I had $2 in savings and in checking about 2 months ago. Oh, man, we got a house and everything. But God is reinventing me in my work. I've been unemployed for a year and a half from the oil field related stuff. And it's amazing. I've asked God, strip me bare. Take it all away. Strip it bare. And now it's coming back, and it's amazing. Things that only he could do, and only do it for me, only do it for my wife. It's just, you got to get in that space.
Yeah.
And all this media crap that's around here, get that all out of the way, because that's not life.
Yeah.
Maturity will cost you, but boy, is it wonderful.
Yeah.
It's really what you really desire.
Yeah. I don't know if y'all have heard the story of Rick Warren and the purpose-driven life. I heard him speak one time, and he talked about, and this was like not long after the purpose-driven life was written and went big, and I think is it still the second biggest selling book after the Bible?
I
think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. So, and then mine is third, just so you know. he was talking about how when he and his wife started out the ministry, his only goal was ever to be a little country pastor.
Yeah.
That's what he wanted. He wanted a little church and just a little flock to shepherd. And so what the purpose-driven life was what he had intended to write when he had this little small church, just how to lead people, how to love one another, how to walk in faith, how to do that. And so, but starting out in his ministry, he and his wife decided that their first year of marriage, they were going to tithe. They were going to give 10% of their income. And every year after that, they were going to give an extra 1%. And so they were married at this point like 35 years. So now they're giving 45% of their income. And then he writes The Purpose-Driven Life and is a multimillionaire. And through that, he had cultivated the discipline of giving and knowing that he's always going to give away. So now he works on an inverted salary. I think he lives on 5% and gives away 90. He paid back for 26 years to Willow Creek his entire salary of what they had paid him.
Amazing.
And then he gives 95% of his income away now. And it's because that's what he was used to. He had told God from the very beginning when he had nothing that it was all his. And so God, he was faithful with little. God blessed him with much because he knew what he was going to do with it. And I just think that's a great...
If I could only say that you get to know those that know. Go find a couple that is successful, and they'll tell you how hard that was.
Mm-hmm.
To put two people from two different backgrounds together is like a really weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, never tell your wife that she's just like her mother. I mean, no, don't do that. Never.
Yeah.
I know what that felt like.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Anyone else? All right. Oh, yeah.
It's a little off topic, but how did you get involved in your career?
Oh, sure. Yeah, so I love to say this because if you look at my resume or my bio, like when I go out to speak, it looks like I've just only done super awesome things. That is not true. That is just because my PR people only edit that stuff in. So I actually spent my 20s doing like wandering in a way. I went to school, I got my degree. So I started out in English literature, and then I decided to double to communications because my English lit advisor was often found like reading poetry to himself in the dark in his office. And I'm like, that is freaking weird, and I will be jobless. So I was like, that's not going to be, I'm not going to get a job doing that. So doubled to communications, got into journalism. And so I started out doing a lot of reporting and then writing freelance. And then I worked as a writer, went to Focus on the Family the first time, actually, right out of college, and did some cool stuff. Like, I actually go, David C. Cook, who actually published my book, I wrote some youth curriculum for them just because I'd written a couple samples, and they were like, we like it. So I did that. But when I wasn't doing that, I did long seasons of temping because I was just trying to find myself. So I was all over the map. I moved all over the country. My current job, which I've now been in a while, but is the first time I ever moved anywhere with a job. Like, I just would go, I'd be like, oh, I'll just try moving here and try this. So I did that, and so historically my job started out in journalism, and then I crossed over into public relations and media relations and did that for 11 years. I was with a pharmaceutical company, I was out in Washington, D.C. at the Washington Times, and then I came back to Focus on the Family. And how I got into what I'm doing right now with Boundless.org is I was leading our PR team at Focus, and that was entirely, what I can chalk this up to, is only I was just walking through open doors. That's all I've ever done, is being willing to take the risk and say, God, if you want me to do this, I'm going to walk through. If you don't want me to, just shut the door. Just stop. Stop it. Don't let me do it. And so I got into PR less than a year. My boss left. I was the youngest person on the team, and someone approached me, like one of the bosses, and was like, hey, do you want her job? And I'm like, sure, I'll just try it. I don't know what I'm doing. It was just super awkward and weird because I was young, but it was really fun and a huge learning experience. During the end of that tenure, the people that were leading Boundless at the time, which was a group of married guys, actually, I was just dating badly, basically, at that time. And these guys approached me, and I was their PR person, so I was doing their campaigns. And they were like, so, we noticed that you're just dating losers, and that you work at Focus on the Family, but clearly can't even put a relationship together. And, do you want us to help you, or whatever, I don't even know what they said. But I just started reading Boundless and stuff, and I will say just quickly that it transformed my view of dating, relationships, what the process is of honoring marriage as a single person. Hebrews 13:4, marriage is to be honored by all. That includes single people. Then at some point in just repping them and working in PR and whatever, they said, we're going to start a podcast. You are single and like to talk. Do you want to host it? And I was like, yeah, I'll give it a whirl, whatever. And that was 8 years ago. And so I've been doing that. And then in 2010, I moved over there full time and just kind of been in the churn. So, yeah. So it's been fun. Kind of weird, but okay. So. Well, thanks, everyone.
You've got a good voice for what you do.
Oh, thank you.
You look nice, too, huh?
Oh, thanks. Well, it's so funny because...
Guys will say that.
Very kind of you. Thank you. It's so funny because I do a lot of radio, and I'll often have, like, DJs say, oh, were you a DJ, or did you... And I think, I just got, like, a lower voice or something, so it's weird. But I'll have people... Because the Boundless show, like, people will... I was like in a nail salon one time somewhere, and this girl comes up to me and she's like, are you Lisa Anderson? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, oh my goodness, I totally recognize your voice. I can't even believe it. That's hilarious. So now I'm recognized by voice, so, which is the okay thing, I guess.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, it's fun. So
God gave you that voice.
He did. He did. Exactly. So it's cool. But I told you my current life situation about it. I've got my mom with me right now. So, yeah. So I'm just in a hard space right now. So it's like everyone thinks I'm just always doing awesome things. I'm actually like I've got my mom, who's 87 years old. She has dementia. She lives with me full time. Mm-hmm. And so it's a total season. It's a hard season. I mean, when I was, I lived the classic single person life. I did what I wanted, when I wanted, how I wanted. It was awesome. And now I've got mom all the time. One of my dear friends is caregiver for her during the day. And it has been a huge blessing, and it is so hard. I actually wrote, if you want to Google it, on boundless.org, I wrote a post months ago called My Mom is Killing Me. And it's a story of how you know, in the general sense of the term, it is hard, hard, hard. She is killing me. But how it is also a lesson in how God does not only call married people and parents to deny themselves. He calls us all to deny ourselves and take up our cross. And this is my chance to do it for my mom. And I always get teared up when I talk about it. So I just want her to finish well. And I want to honor God in this season. And it's super hard. And it's, I don't know what it's going to look like or how much longer she has, but it's been really cool. So she's staying. My friend is with her, which is why I'm returning again tomorrow, which is a bummer because I would have loved to hang out with y'all more, but it's been super, super blessing, and I want her, like I said, to finish well and to honor God in this process, and I don't think I'll have any regrets doing that. So
she has you, though.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my goodness, you were in the last session. But then I talked about my total downward spiral with, because I think, you know, here's mom. She has six kids who love her, or watching out for her, watching all her finances, setting up her appointments. And then I'm like, and I'm single. Who's going to do that for me? And then I'm just like downward spiral in a pit of lies of like, no one will care for me, and I'll be a ward of the state, and I'm going to die. So if any of you are still healthy in 45 years or whatever, please look me up and see if I need help. Thank you all so much.
I want to ask her a question too, but it's about my friend who's dating her.
I look nice, guys. Congratulations.
You look nice, man.
Okay.
Because
I was like,
thank you. How are you?
I'm like, keep putting.
Oh, my mom
gave
it to me today, and I tried it, and I'm like,
look, I've been on like two, tried two.
I've reached boundless.